Mike, turn your games down.
Hi, everybody. Episode 235 of Games My Mom Found. I am Mike Elberton, and who's running around with a crowbar with me tonight?
This is Joe Butler, professor of theoretical science.
And Daniel?
I am Daniel Jones. I'm not a professor of anything.
But you are a podcaster?
I am a podcaster. I host a podcast called Of Course We Have a Podcast, because my co-host and I, Jeremy Brown, we have been podcasting together for over 10 years now, at least, off and on, and we're both middle-aged white dudes, so of course we have a podcast.
Yeah, that sounds accurate. I love that. And who else is with me tonight?
Hi, I'm Elise Knorr. I am a professor. I'm an associate professor of English at Regis University in Denver. I'm also a poet and a video games author. I've written two books for Boss Fight Books, one about Super Mario Bros. 3 and one about GoldenEye 64. I also have a podcast about untold stories from queer women's history, and that's called Sweet Bitter.
Okay, cool. And there'll be a link in the show
you
notes.
You wrote the GoldenEye book?
I did, yes.
That is fantastic. I haven't read it yet, but I've wanted to. It's been on my Amazon wish list for a long time since it came out.
Put me on your list.
That's cool.
I hope you like it. Hope you like it.
I'm sure I will.
And we are here to talk about a game that I have neglected to play for over 20 years. Half-Life, developed by Valve and came out in 1998. My God. So the way I usually like to start this out, I like to ask people what your experience is. So my experience with this game the first time, I have not much before this past week. One of the girls I dated when I was like 16, and my parents for some reason drove my ass from Milwaukee, Wisconsin to Minneapolis, St. Paul to meet a girl. Why, I don't know. But they did, thankfully. And her brother gave me a copy of Half-Life that he burned on a CD with Half-Life Blue Shift and whatever the stuff was. And I remember, and I'm like, okay, cool. Never touched it because I don't like PC gaming. And then I played it on PS2. I bought the PS2 copy, which is garbage. It is one of the only two games I ever traded in my life.
Wow.
That's what I thought about Half-Life until this past week. What about you, Joe?
Funny enough, I also played this on PS2. and fun fact, you can't fucking play the PS2 version on a slim PS2. So when I bought it off of GameStop for like $10 a deuce, I took it home and tried to play it and it wouldn't work. And I'm like, is it because the disc is blue? And I had to tape the sides of the game to get it to work. And I'm just well, this is some kind of weird. I don't know. I wonder if I could find it still. But it's like, yeah, if you have a blue PS2 disc and it's not running on your slim, tape a square around the circle hole and it should get it going. And it did. And I'm like, okay, thank you. Thank you for jury-rigging yourself, Half-Life.
That is weird.
Yeah. Wow.
I didn't have any problem when I tried it on PS2. I just didn't like it because I like first-person shooters like GoldenEye, for example, at the time, Perfect Dark, were mission-based. I didn't like this being a continuous game where I can screw myself, essentially.
Oh, I loved that part of it.
I do now.
The reason I dislike the PS2 version is because I prefer more clean UI in games, and I think that's where that started, because the PS2 version, like the auto-aim put this awful like bracket around enemies all the time. It was so ugly. I hated it.
It's bad. Dan, what is your history?
I have that version. So my history is similar. My sister's boyfriend at the time, who was a few years older than me, gave me his copy of Half-Life. And it was the Game of the Year edition, so it came with Opposing Force, and Blue Shift hadn't come out yet. So Blue Shift was coming out, like, in a few months, I think, by the time he gave it to me. And you got, like, a free copy of Blue Shift with it. So I played through Half-Life, and it blazed through it until Zen, which, yeah, I just hated. I can't stand. And then I fell in love with it. It was, to me, like, that set the gold standard. But we can get into all that. But, yeah, so I played that. And then I didn't really have a great PC. So by the time 2 came out, so I played 2 for the first time on my Xbox, on the original Xbox, speaking of bad ports, and still loved it. So I don't even care. I just was happy to be able to play that game.
It would be a big deal when it came to Xbox, but I never touched it. I own it, but never touched it.
Yeah, and what about it's not great.
And what about you, Elise?
Yeah, I missed it when it came out originally, too, since I was only playing console games. And so I played it much, much, much more recently as part of my research into first-person shooter history of the 90s for my GoldenEye book. I was curious how, you know, what kinds of maybe parallel innovation was happening or what kinds of things GoldenEye might have influenced on Half-Life. And so I'm a Mac user, and so I actually had to borrow a PC from my buddy Derek, who sort of like, he's a computer guy, so he built his own PC and he let me borrow it, boot it up Linux, and then I'm trying to, you know, play Half-Life through Steam on this PC with no mouse, no experience playing PC shooters. I was like, this is really hard. I don't understand how to make these W and F keys make me move around. So I got a very old school experience, I guess, and it was extremely hard.
I can see that though. Like, this game is challenging if you're not used to that type of controls.
It's true. I mean, it's challenging no matter what, but I think the hardest thing is just that it, one minute it's a first-person shooter, the next minute it's a platformer, and it's not very forgiving about the transitions between those.
That turned me off of this game, I think, when I was younger, too. I played this the first time, I think I was probably like 16 or so, and that really turned me off.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm good at first-person shooters and I'm good at platformers, but combine them together and I'm going to be lost. I don't know how to, like, jump and crouch into a pipe at the exact same time and... It's just really aggravating.
So have you played Star Wars Dark Forces? That game does it too. I like that game, but that's not a good game so anymore. Well, Half-Life, well, I mean, that's
just
one thing that
I don't even know
me.
Why you invited me on this podcast, because I can't be associated with these bad takes.
I love this. I'm just going to get out there. I actually love this playthrough of the game. Like, I came into this with no expectations. It was only on the show because I'm like, I really should play Half-Life one of these days. I consider myself a gamer. I love playing old games that people were like, oh, you know, and it's always, so I've always regretted not playing this. And I was like, okay, I'm going to force myself to do it. And about midway through, I wasn't forcing myself. It was like, I can't, this is fun.
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful game, and I love watching playthroughs of it online so that I don't have to pull out my hair. I just, the story is just incredible. It feels like watching an X-Files episode mixed with Alien, mixed with, I don't know, Outer Limits. It's incredible.
I liked the majority of this game, but I actually really fucking hated it. I'm not going to lie.
No, it's fair. Like, I mean, it's hard to play. Like, so for us, the week before, me and Joe played Modern Warfare 3. Call of Duty, so coming from that and playing this was a very bizarre experience.
Yeah, those are very different.
Oh yeah,
it's like hanging out with like your buddy and then hanging out with his great-grandfather. Like, it might be cool, but they're different. So different.
But I gotta say, I think I had more fun with this. Like, at first I didn't like the idea that, okay, if I get hit, if I, you know, I'm gonna lose my health, and it doesn't just recharge back to me, or when I, you know, as I continue through the game, I felt like I could screw myself over if I missed too much stuff. And that was one of my fears going into this game. But as the game progressed, it went away. Like, I wasn't scared anymore. I'm like, I'll find more ammo. I'll find more health. I mean, if I did something really stupid, I would just reload and not get shocked by the guy shooting the green lightning bolt at me in front of my face. But I tried. I mean, that happened quite often where I would just reload, especially later on in the game. But I never, like, the fear wasn't there as much, which is one of the things with me in games, like a game where I feel like I can screw myself and not be able to finish the game. There's a lot of fear.
It's also a fun fact that this game is like a third horror game, which Mike absolutely hates. So,
oh yes.
I think for me, the horrifying stuff wasn't even the monsters or the gore. It was the like for some reason, seeing the scientists do CPR on each other really like got me. I mean, that shit, I haven't seen that in another game, and for some reason that made it feel really real and really scary.
Did you stick around?
Oh yeah,
they come back.
Yeah.
Oh, they turn into something, or they just get back up?
They get back up.
Oh, I didn't even know they did that either. I didn't kill any scientists except for like maybe one. I know you can. So the guy'd be like, oh yeah, after you get this gun from him, you feel free to shoot him. I'm like, why?
Yeah, or how you have to shoot the security guard to get your first gun in the game. I mean, you have to crowbar a security guard to get your first gun in the game. Like, that was a wake-up call to me.
I don't remember that.
I didn't do that.
Oh, so I'm just a psychopath.
Yeah, I just got my gun.
I never did that. I know that you can, but I never did.
Forget I said anything. I'm a totally safe person to be around.
Hey, look at the bright side. It doesn't matter in this game. You can kill whoever you want. The game's like, that's nice. We don't care.
It's true. They really don't care. There's no morality.
No, as long as they open the door that you needed them open before you murder them, you're fine.
Look, there's four NPCs, and they're all canon because three of them exist in the sequel, so it's fine.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. That makes
plus, to be fair, I don't think any of these scientists are getting out of here, except for those couple. Like,
if you played Half-Life 2, technically Barney survives because you meet Barney at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
The scientist with the glasses is Dr. Brine. The black scientist is the dad for that's Alex's dad. And the only one that doesn't make it out is the weird scientist. Looks like an Einstein, though.
Austin. No, he Einstein doesn't make it out.
He makes it out. Dr. Kleiner.
Dr. Kleiner's got the glasses.
No, that's Dr. Breen.
Oh, there we go. Okay, yeah, you're right. Okay.
I trust his opinion more than yours, Joe.
Yeah, I'm right. I'm right 70% of the time, every time. So it's okay.
Like, I mean, and I guess especially for 1998, this must have been a hell of an experience to play a game that is, you know, first-person shooter, but it's very much like one long campaign.
Yeah.
It really was. I mean, that's it. Can I speak to that?
Sure, please. Please do, because I can't.
As the old gamer in this group, older, I think, than any of you. It just, I had played Doom and Duke Nukem and Dark Forces, which I loved. And I think I had even played Dark Forces 2 at that point. Unreal was almost out, or it had come out. Quake. Like, I had played all those shooters, Hexen, and GoldenEye. And then Half-Life comes out, and it was just like, I had never played anything like it. The world felt real and alive. The whole first, 10 minutes where you're just riding on that tram and you see the world of Black Mesa all around you and you see people just going about their business. There had never been anything like that in a first-person shooter that I had ever played. And, I was still pretty young. And so I went pretty much from platformers to first-person shooters. So outside of, Metal Gear Solid and Legend of Zelda, I'd never seen a game where the world was such an integral part of it. And the seamless nature of it, the way that you do just move along and there aren't sectioned out levels, it made it feel more alive and more real and believable. It was revolutionary at the time. And I think I give the game a lot of grace because of that. There's a lot of things about it that I forgive. Because it was so revolutionary, I am biased because I definitely look at it.
Completely fine, but
I look at it with some nostalgic goggles for sure.
Even for me, a guy that my first PC shooter I ever played was Stalker by Shadow of Chernobyl. Don't do that, by the way. Do not have that be your first game. Oh, that game is brutal. But so that was my first introduction to this type of world. Like, and playing this game in 2023 for the first time, I was able to get into it and I was able to understand the controls. I didn't like jumping. I didn't like when it became a platform, but the fact that I could save whenever I wanted to, I could deal with it because I could just fix my mistake. But it's still fun. Like the story, I mean, I didn't give a shit what was happening to the story, to be honest. I was just like, oh, go here, shoot people. You got it. Kill alien. All right. But it worked.
That integration of narrative into, I guess, what is it, like scripted scenes, but that you never give up control of your character. There's no cuts. I mean, I think there's one cutscene when he passes out, but it was revolutionary since no one else was doing that. But also playing it now, it feels so refreshing because I'm so the long, long, long cutscenes get so tedious and I'm like, skip, 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 just let me play the game. And so it feels so, it's just so smart how they've integrated everything, especially that opening tram scene, because it's such a nice way of showing you how fucked you are once the aliens happen, because you're so deep within the bowels of this mountain. And you know that because of how long that opening cutscene was. And there's all those ominous things, like you see them doing sketchy things that whole tram ride in, you know.
I didn't pay enough attention to the tram ride because I was doing other things at the time.
They're doing sketchy stuff.
I was just, I don't think I even looked. I think I just sat there and just let the game run.
Yeah.
And even after you get off the tram, you could be walking around the offices on your way to the test chamber. And there's scenes where people will be meeting in hushed meetings and inside these rooms, and they'll put the blinds down or they'll close the door so that you're not hearing them or seeing them.
Cool. And it's so realistic to you have the bathrooms and the locker rooms. You can go up to the microwave in the staff kitchen and you could explode the meal. And I just think that in particular, and the little detail of having him be running late for work speaks to one of the game's main themes, which I think work is one of the game's main concerns. This is just a guy. He just went to his job and this happened. He's not some space marine hero. He's just a guy at his job, and his job is fucking, it's such a nice metaphor for just like all the shit we deal with at our jobs, right?
Yeah.
He's also 27.
He's at the right age before everything starts to break down in your 30s. So
yeah.
Well, you're welcome, Joe.
That suit does a lot of the work too. But I also like speaking at opening too. It also helps that, you know, because you're underground, there's tons of toxic waste, and it's like, oh yeah, we're definitely doing something very bad around here.
Yes.
It's almost as if there's another company that's trying to create portals a completely different way on the other side of the earth.
Which I have played those actually. But.
Just while we're on that, I'm so tickled that Gladys is not only the name of the portal thing, but also the name of the killer whale that's teaching all the other killer whales how to capsize ships.
Oh my god, is it? That's fucking it hilarious.
Is. I didn't know.
She's like, yeah, so the orca who got, like, there's this orca who got, this happened like all last month, this orca, like, this matriarch orca has been teaching her pod, and the pods have been teaching other pods, how to attack and capsize boats, and they've been doing it. And her name's Gladys.
Oh, that's awesome.
Was she named before she was found out for doing all this? Or after?
Yeah, I think that was her name originally. They sort of, like, the researchers all have names for them. Wouldn't it be great if they named her after
okay.
Portal? Like,
right? They might. Someone might have.
It's funnier before, because that means she turned into GLaDOS, as opposed to, like, oh, we named her after that.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I heard a little bit about that, but I didn't realize she had a name, but that is cool. But no, this game does a good job of you feeling like an everyman. I mean, yes, the suit makes you, you know, more powerful, but, you know, you're just a guy with a, I mean, the guns are all pretty basic for the most part. I mean, you do get some cool weapons, but for the most part, shotgun, pistol, SMG, nothing extreme until later.
Yeah, the second half of the game, you start to get some crazy stuff.
But starting out with guns. That crowbar is really, like, that iconic crowbar is just, like, that's a blue-collar, you know, tool. Like, that's just your most basic, like, working on something kind of tool. So I love that. That's one of my favorite things.
It's a good way to start it. And I always think of, like, because I played Bioshock 1 long before I played this game. And Bioshock 1, I think when you get your wrench, there's a crowbar with a dead guy somewhere nearby.
Whatever, Atlas, or whatever the hell his name is, does say, would you kindly grab a crowbar or something?
Yeah, he does. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that game.
Definitely a nod.
I mean, it's, you know, that one's kind of the same idea of this, except more mission-based and much later. But, like, it took me a little while to get into this game. Like, I know my first playthrough on PS2, I got to, I think when you start fighting some of the military, I think that's where I quit. Because at first I didn't like fighting the military, but then I appreciate it because if I kill military, I get their ammo. So I was happy to fight them because then I get more ammo.
We're like, hostiles, you know, or something. We've got hostiles, right? Isn't that the name of that chapter?
It wasn't very far when I quit playing and sold this game back to GameStop for like $2, probably.
It's pretty shocking.
The AI. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say it's pretty shocking that, like, the military comes in and then the Black Ops come in to, like, take down the military. Like, it just, like, the enemies get so layered, and it's, and just to overhear them on their walkie-talkies, like, having moral qualms about killing civilians and all of that kind of immersive storytelling with the military was great. Happy 4th of July, everyone.
I'll come out after, it's okay.
Yeah, I'll come out a few days after.
And yeah, all I was gonna say is that another thing about the military soldiers that always blew me away was their artificial intelligence. Like, just how, maybe it's not like the best AI we've seen in video games, but it felt like the best, at least at the time. They just felt so believable. They would flank you, they would try to flush you out with grenades, and their little walkie-talkie voices that sounded so menacing and so intimidating. And they were kind of bullet sponges too. They could take a few hits.
Yeah, it wasn't I played this game on easy because it's me. It wasn't that bad where it would, like, it ever, like, there were only a couple enemies in this game where I felt like they took too many shots. Sometimes I felt like those grunts would take more. Usually they weren't too bad, but there were a couple times they just would not die.
Yeah.
As the resident GoldenEye person, I do have to point out that the Valve guys, once GoldenEye came out and they played it, apparently they completely, like, started over and redid their AI because they were so impressed by the GoldenEye AI, and they were picking up little things. And so the key with the GoldenEye AI, and then I think plays out in the Half-Life AI too, is that it doesn't have to be that smart. What you have to do is showcase it for your player so that it seems smart to them. So things like the walkie-talkies, right, or doing CPR, all of that just makes them seem more alive.
Right.
smart at all.
Yeah, because they did seem smart. Like, you know, I forget. I mean, my only issue with this game is that I didn't have subtitles, because I love subtitles, just because I like to read what's happening.
Are subtitles on this game?
Yeah. Not that I saw. And I looked.
Probably. I believe it, because it was 1998, so.
Yeah, they didn't like subtitles in those old games. I mean, I get it. They're like, hey, you got voices, you don't need subtitles, but I need subtitles.
Does Black Mesa have it?
No. I think so. I'm pretty sure.
Who on this call has played Black Mesa?
I have.
Okay. I've played through half of it, and then I just got to Surface Tension or something like that, and I was just like, okay, I'm good. I enjoyed it, but it's not the same.
Did you play the half of it that had Zen added before or after?
So, yeah, I didn't get to Zen. But I've seen a playthrough of the whole game. I've watched it all, but I just haven't played it all myself.
Fun fact about that game, when it first came out, people were really excited for the ending, and then the game just ends whenever he jumps in the portal to go to Zen. And they're like, yeah, they're like, the fuck? And they're like, yeah, there's not enough time. That's why the game's in its early access, so just deal with it. And then like a year later, it came out.
Listen, personally, when I was younger and I played Half-Life, my headcanon for many years was just, yeah, it ends after you jump in the portal. He just escapes that way. And that was like, it just transports him to New York or something.
I would have been okay with that.
And that's personally. It. I did not like Zen that much. I was just like, yeah, there is no Zen. What Zen? Zen?
Zen, you don't fight a ton of aliens either in this game, I feel like. I mean, there's some, but it's mostly just military men, which is fine. I mean, they're there. They're sprinkled around, but I felt like I fought a lot more military than I did aliens.
I feel like I fought approximately a billion head crabs. Those fucking things. Oh. Those are the bane of my... Yeah, that was rough.
The head crabs weren't as bad for me. There were some other little, like... I called them a flea. I don't remember what they were, but they were little things that ran at me and would, like, pissed me off.
My favorite creatures... Yeah. My favorite creatures are the I think I called them the I heard them called the puppy peepers or something like that. It's the little animals that like, or the aliens that like scream and send out shockwaves.
Yep. Oh, the things that look like a dog got their head cut off.
Yeah,
I like them.
They're not in the second game. Yeah,
but I also wouldn't pay a lot of money, but I'd pay money to get one of those head crab plushes that you can put on your head. They're pretty cute.
Well, I'm sure Amazon has you covered if we Google it.
Well, Valve came out with them. Valve used to have a bunch of stuff for this game, but then, like, I don't think they do anymore just because, you know, people don't sell stuff and all that stuff.
Well, they don't make games either, so.
Yeah, sure. Well, fun fact, because we were talking about a little bit earlier, when Black Mesa came out, when they were making it, Gabe Newell's not a bad person, and even when he found out they were making it, he's like, hey, you guys don't have to hide this. You can... You know, we'll even put it on a Valve if you want to. And if you guys are missing any like sound recordings or you guys need like models and stuff, I'll give it to you. So there's always that. Yeah.
If only Nintendo could take a lesson from that, huh?
Don't even get me started with that.
I know. I don't want to. We do it enough in the show. Cool. I mean, they seem like a really cool company. And I haven't played Black Mesa. I want to, but I didn't. I wanted to get this original experience first before I ever touch that version of the game, because I felt like that might break me to not want to play the original.
If you do in order, you should probably play Black Mesa after you finish episode 2.
Yeah, I probably will. I want to finish this. I want to play what Valve made.
Yeah.
But I was just surprised how much this game, you know, kept me intact, you know, and interested. And the fact that you're just running around this, you know, lab forever, it feels like, but each area feels unique enough. Like there's the one part with the minecarts, like that was interesting, running around on minecarts just trying to figure out where the hell to go and not die.
I don't know, that area kind of sucks. As somebody who loves that game, I hate on a rail.
It didn't bother me.
Because you just, it is, you get lost so easily in that section. It's much better in Black Mesa, I felt. I don't know what they did. There's some subtle signposting that they used. I was just able to get through that real quick.
I also don't think it... I think it was midway, maybe an hour in, when I finally figured out you could break crate for items.
Oh.
But I'm also notorious. Yeah. Like, when I played Resident Evil 4 for the first time, I learned you could break crates when I was on the island, so... Yeah, it happens sometimes with me, where I'm like, oh, wait, you can get stuff out of these.
I did have to wonder about the minecarts, like, you know, the other huge game at the time, the Donkey Kong Country, which has so many minecarts going on. I was like, are they bringing, like, this platformer aesthetic into this first-person shooter survival horror game? Because, like, it's giving me...
This game really made me think of Resident Evil.
That's fair.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially the first couple hours.
Because I saw so many influences. I mean, obviously, like, Alien with the guys who, with the head crabs jumping on your head and having your body. But then also the G-Man straight up is the cigarette-smoking man from the X-Files. You can't argue with me about that. It's just, he's, like, he's exactly that guy. And I love him. That ending is so creepy where you think,
I actually have never watched X-Files for some reason.
Same, but I need to. After, like, we talked about this, I need to. I think it's on Netflix, right?
It was.
Oh, maybe Hulu.
I don't know.
Shady, like, older white man in a suit who, like, is in on an alien government conspiracy. They're one and the same. It's incredible. Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, but even for a gamer, I didn't really care about the story. I was just, like, having so much fun. And, like, the fear for me really, as I was talking about earlier, it really did go away after a while. There was one part that really stressed me the fuck out, the part with the green vine things that are coming out of the floor that you have to, like, crawl by them.
Oh, yeah, they're tentacles.
I missed the guy that told me that they activate by sound, so what I would do is I would throw grenades at them and then run for my life, and that seemed to work.
No.
Oh, you can throw grenades at the other side of the silo. That's what I pretty much always do.
That's what I did my second time through, but see, no subtitles, so I missed it when the guy talked and told me.
You're supposed to use your ears.
Yeah, that was busy.
Just like they do.
The one that scared the crap out of me too is that scene where you're just walking by a room and then you see a scientist get absolutely mauled by, or maybe it's a military guy, get absolutely mauled by an alien popping out of a vent or something. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's just something you witness. And it's like, wow, there's just chaos going on all around me and it could happen at any moment. That definitely kept me on my toes and added to the fear factor, I think.
That's fair.
It was a Barney, I think.
I kept the sound on because I need to hear, because I'm notorious and also in this podcast to play games without sound. And I had to have sound on every time I play this because I need to hear, if I hear somebody talking on a walkie, oh, there's a guard somewhere. I hear just, you know, random sound, there's an alien somewhere. Like, you have to be aware of what's near you or you won't be able to get through this game.
Also, the sound is so iconic.
It is.
You want to hear it.
I like playing with no sound.
There's a couple of moments where, like, a soundtrack kicks in and it's really good. Like, I think whenever you get the HEV suit, you get a really fun, like, techno music soundtrack that makes you kind of want to bop all the way down to to where you're supposed to go.
Yeah, but then it's so creepy that that's the only time there's music. I mean, it's such a quiet game, and so you're much more aware of, like, your the kind of biofeedback of the sounds of these monsters and these people running around.
I want to say there's two more, but I can't think of what they are off the top of my head.
Well, there's the weird soldier guys, alien soldier guys that, like, shoot the hornets at you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And have, like, the thing popping out of their chest.
Well, and later you get that same gun that shoots hornets, the little bugs.
I used it, like, once, and I'm like, this is garbage, and I never used it again.
I hate that gun.
Okay, good. It wasn't just me.
My favorite gun is the Ghostbuster gun.
At least the other favorite gun. It's a good-ass weapon.
Yes.
I feel like I just really love swinging that crowbar. Like, there's something so satisfying about the mechanic of it. Maybe it was just the easiest thing for me to do on my little keypad, but just that it's multi-use, that you can use it to break through glass, that it just feels, I don't know, the way it swung, it just felt really solid in that kind of game feel.
Oh, yeah. Mike, I think I'm going to make this, like, for sure, for every time you have me play something on PC, I refuse to use a keyboard, because I still refuse to use a keyboard. I play this whole game on controller, and I want you to know, I almost shit my pants twice, because he's very finicky when you use a controller, so I fell on my death at least twice, and I've almost, like, inched my way to do stuff, because I was almost, like, off the edge of the cliff.
I have to play keyboard. Like, I literally am buying the damn Call of Duty games for $20 on Steam just so I can play with mouse and keyboard.
Joe, did you play it the original with controller or Black Mesa?
Black Mesa, I'm pretty sure, used the controller back in the day because I played that, like, on my laptop as a teenager. I don't remember when that came out. But yeah, I have not played anything for this podcast or in the future on keyboard. And if it forces me to, I open Steam big picture mode. I look for controller mods and I enter the controller mods. And they don't work as well as you think they would, though. Trust me, like, the...
Yeah.
This game is very much made for mouse and keyboard.
Yes, it really is.
Yeah. I'm just stubborn.
I'm sure that contributed to your feelings towards it.
Oh, yeah.
How'd you play this without a mouse?
Seriously.
Very slowly.
You use the right analog stick, and it just controls the mouse.
Yeah, but she didn't have that. Oh. So.
I was literally using all keys. It was crazy. Well, but I mean, that's how I played Doom when I was a kid. Like, I just remember, like, when I was playing PC games as a kid, I never used a mouse. So I guess I was like, let's just do this old school.
Bad idea.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Doom works as Doom. You don't have to look up. This game, you got to look up and jump.
Great point.
Right.
Yeah, at least if you go to Steam and go to big picture mode, there's an option to play with controllers, and Steam kind of has like a controller input kind of thing. Mm. But there's also like I recall for Modern Warfare, there's a 360 keybinds and all that stuff. Oh, but yeah, well, and then when you play the games, you can hit the Xbox button, and you can even adjust mouse sensitivity, so it's not like going all over the place.
That sounds fabulous.
Okay. I just really like mouse and keyboard now for shooters. I don't like it for other games, but for shooters, that is my ideal way to play. I mean, I wasn't sure about like if I was going to like the platforming in this game because there were a few times when it pissed me off. But after a while, I got used to it. Like there's the one scene where they throw you in a trash compactor to kill you, which I find amusing. You got the platform and it wasn't that bad. Like I was worried, oh, this is going to be a nightmare. Yeah. And it was like, you know, boom, boom, boom. I was out of there.
That is a very Star Wars reference, isn't it?
That's how it felt.
Definitely is.
And it sounds funny. They just throw you in a trash compactor. Like, why don't you just shoot this guy? Like, and get rid of him. You just throw him in a trash compactor. Like, oh, he'll just get crushed to death instead. Like,
yeah,
not very good soldiers.
That's because I think someone even says to just set him on fire, and they're like, no, that's not a very fun idea.
Just shoot him in the head.
Yeah, that
it's efficient. It's like more humane than getting crushed to death.
Towers, or he's like, just give me a gun. I'll literally shoot him in the head right now.
No, the HEV suit protects your head. That's how you're able to breathe underwater.
Oh, okay. But you can't breathe in water for that long. Otherwise, you start dying.
No, I'm joking. That's not true.
Oh, okay. See, I can't see the face because it's not third person.
Did y'all use any of like have fun with like the secondary fire too? I think that's some of the stuff that I liked in this game too.
Guns had secondary fire? Besides the grenade launcher?
The handgun, if you hold secondary fire, it basically just fires continuously. The shotgun has a double, because it's a shotgun, it's a double barrel, so it fires both barrels, so you fire two shots.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yes. The grenade launcher, I don't remember what the revolver does. I don't remember ever using it.
Really good, by the way.
Yeah, I love me a good magnum. What else? I think was it like a rail gun, whatever it's called, the one that charges up. I think you can charge
I use that to take out helicopters.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of the guns, I think 90% of the guns have an alternate fire.
Okay, I didn't know. I knew some did. Like I knew the two space guns do. The one that you can charge up, and then the other one looks like a Ghostbuster cannon, which is really damn useful when you finally get it.
Oh, you can zoom in with the crossbow. That's that too.
Okay, yes. I did do that. The crossbow is really, really powerful, by the way, in this game. Yes,
it is.
I was surprised.
I never used any alt fires. I should have, but I never did.
I used a grenade launcher a lot because that was really useful for blowing up people and just getting them out of my way to save ammo.
Yeah,
especially when you get above ground. Yeah, once you get above ground, it just gets really, really crazy.
Yeah. I was surprised how often you go above ground and go back underground. Like, yeah, we freed up. Oh, no, we got to go back down there.
I know. Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. It's very, like, dizzying and frustrating. But
I just wanted to leave. Yeah. I'm like, you're out. You're good. Leave now. Like, why are you going back now?
Yeah. It's a nightmare, right? It's an actual nightmare that adds a lot to the kind of claustrophobic feeling of just survival horror. I've got to get out of here, but I can't get out of here. Even once I'm out of here, I'm not out of here. And that feels very Resident Evil too, right? Like you're always like outside, but you're still on campus or you're in the grounds and you can't get away.
And plus when you get out, you have helicopters chasing after you. Yeah, and
it's worse. And
the military.
Right. Yeah, I mean, great pacing in this game, right? Like the pacing and just the like how often they're adding new challenges or adding new twists, new enemies is deeply satisfying.
You know what enemy confused the ever loving shit out of me?
Which one?
Did the fucking military like hire ninjas?
The ninjas are the assassins.
Yeah, it's so weird.
They're only in like two parts of this game.
Yeah,
not in very much.
They were like Plan B. Like, you know, okay. The military didn't do the job, so now let's send in the special forces, you know.
You can skip them, too. Like, at one point when I ran into in a warehouse, I completely ran past them and ended up finding out where to go and just left.
You can
I killed
skip
a couple
lot of
I'm
stuff.
Like, yeah, you're good. We don't need to fight.
Yeah.
You can skip a lot of stuff, too, in this game.
Can
you? I mean, not by glitching, but just by, like, you don't have to kill enemies if you can get past them fast enough.
Yeah, you can run past stuff, yeah.
I killed everybody.
Very Resident Evil.
I murdered every enemy that came near me just because I wanted to get rid of everything because it made me feel better.
Yeah.
I didn't like it when I hear somebody talking on the radio or noises. I'm like, I want to explore in peace. So I don't want there to be trouble.
The term you're looking for, Mike, is mind goblins. The mind goblins won't, you know, the mind goblins, you can't use the your high potions or your the best potions in Final Fantasy until you get to the final boss. And then when you fight the final boss, you don't use them.
I mean, I do play that. Oh, I was pissed when you halfway through this game, they take away all my ammo I've been saving up. I was not happy.
Then we get bonked in the head.
Yeah, when they throw you in the trash compactor, they take away everything. I was like, what? I've been saving all this game so far.
That was a thing games did back then. I remember, yeah. I think like Dark Forces does that, or maybe Dark Forces 2, one of them. And
well, Dark Forces is just, like, each is a different level.
Oh, yeah, you're right. So
maybe Dark Forces 2. I haven't played that, though, so I can't
Red Faction it. Does it. I know Red Faction does it, and because Red Faction is just a Half-Life clone, and I love it for that, but that's what it is. And then Chronicles of Riddick did it, too. It was just a thing they loved to do in games like that.
It bothered me because I wasn't expecting it, because I went in this game as blind as I felt comfortable doing. I mean, I had a guide open at all times, yeah. But I didn't tend to look at it until later on when I get stuck a few times, then I started using it more, but I tried to play the game just by exploring the way you're supposed to play a game. Yeah. And like for the most part, I was able to figure out what to do. There were just a few times where I was just like, I'm very unsure and I need to look up, you know, confirmation, like hit this switch, move this here and this will do this. Because there were a couple of times, I got lost in the freezer for a while. I couldn't find the way out of the freezer when I was in the earlier in the game.
It is crazy to think back to that era when we couldn't Google things. We couldn't look things. Like, so if you were playing this game when it first came out, I guess you could buy the official strategy guide at Best Buy or something. But would they even have had one, or was that just a Nintendo thing?
They would have had, Brady Games was around. So there would have been a guide.
Yeah.
I used to buy a ton of guides.
Probably a guide.
I love those Nintendo guides. They're just great artifacts. They're just beautiful artifacts of, like, fandom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a very nice artifact. It's not a guide, but when Half-Life 2 came out, they put out, like, this art book called Raising the Bar, all about, like, it's art and, like, development stories from the team. And, you know, it's the kind of book we see all the time that releases when a game comes out now. Like, there's one, I have one for Last of Us 2. And, like, it's very common now, but back then it really wasn't. And the first couple chapters are all about Half-Life 1. But the problem with that book right now is it sells for upwards of, like, $200 to $300.
That's huge.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, I got it a couple years ago for $150. Because I was like, this is only going to go up in price. So I bought it.
That's fair. I mean, I bought expensive comic books, but that's about as far. The only expensive books I bought. I have a couple.
That's definitely my most indulgent retro purchase.
But hey, I mean, if it's something that, like, this game means a lot to you, like, I didn't even know, it wasn't until I posted for comments and questions that you're like, hey, I love this game. I'm like, come on. Like, let's go. You know, and it makes me happy. Like, this game, you know, actually still stood up the test of time for the most part. There's a few archaic things, but, you know, it's still like it played fine in 2023. I was able to play it and beat it and enjoy it without cheating, which I almost did.
Well, I think what really shows that it stood the test of time is that it still feels innovative for me. Like, maybe the visuals look a little dated, but the immersion in the gameplay and the storyline, the pacing all feel really innovative, which to me is, like, really, you know, really hard to find in a game that became something that so many first-person shooters copied and were inspired by, to still feel surprised. Like, hanging out with my buddy's great-great-grandfather, like, oh, yeah, I see where he came from, but you're really cool. You know, like, you're actually still dope. Like, you can still throw down. It's just such a lovely thing. I mean, that's how you know you're engaging with a real work of art.
Yeah. And there's so much stuff hidden in this game, too. Like, I felt like I needed to explore to find extra ammo, and I liked that. Like, I actually would try to, like, search around and look for anything I could find just so I could get more ammo, more equipment, more health.
Yeah, the lore, like how much the lore is still out there. Like, people who have played every single game in the series, and there's still unanswered questions about, like, who the G-Man is and what everyone's doing. Like, that is a great way to build fandom and to build addiction, is just to explain less. And so, yeah, I mean, there's people out there with Half-Life tattoos. I get it. Like, it's a cult classic for a reason. I totally get that.
For me.
No, you're fine. I was going to say, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. For me, it really was, like, all those little things that they did not say that made it so appealing to me, because there was so much left to my imagination. And, like I said in my comment, Mike, since I played it, I remember making up kind of backstories for characters. And then for the last like 10 years, I've been toying with like a screenplay of it. I've never written a screenplay, but this is like my practice run. Just writing a screenplay for the first Half-Life for like a film adaptation, because there's so many little details that you can fill in. There's so much unsaid, and that's a big part of the appeal for me. And you can, like Elise said, there's so many videos on YouTube that you can find. People just really go down the rabbit hole. The iceberg video is super fascinating to watch, and theories about what Half-Life 3 would be like, and just all that kind of stuff. I'm a huge nerd for it. I love it.
And so much environmental storytelling. I mean, I didn't watch any videos yet, like I normally do. I just didn't get around to it. But like so much of this game, you know, it just kind of shows you, which I like tell more than show. I want you to throw it in my face, and I want those cutscenes, because otherwise I don't always catch it. But this game does a good job of like, if you just want to be someone that just wants to run through it, you can be, and you still will gather stuff from just what you're experiencing and what little I heard when the scientists would talk.
And I think, like, what Dan's saying about the screenplay element of it is that they did hire a sci-fi writer to do a lot of the storytelling. And so it does have that really cinematic feel and that kind of, like, classic story architecture. And not only are people still theorizing on YouTube with all the lore, but they're also finding new ways to play it. Like, I watched a run-through where it was, like, save as many scientists as you can, and that was really fun. And people are still modding it. So somebody modded, like, an alternate ending that you actually do escape out of Zen after turning the G-Man steel down. And I think that's really cool when people still keep those things alive in those ways.
Yeah,
that is cool. And also, like, Valve released a source code for this game, so you can just buy the source code version of it, so you can screw with it.
Yeah.
Which is really cool they did that.
I mean, and the GoldenEye guys, I know to this day, like, when the GoldenEye source people who are modding online need help, the GoldenEye guys will answer their questions on Twitter. And obviously, they don't have a profit stake in it anymore. But I think that there was a really special time in the 90s when companies like Valve, you know, they would release all of that. And I think with the game, they released, like, the whole software package that you could mod. And so there's so much trust in your audience that they'll keep buying the product. They just want to participate and be involved and express their own creativity. And there's nothing, you know, dangerous about that from a profit standpoint. It only encourages more fandom.
If only Nintendo knew that.
Yeah.
But no, I completely agree.
What are you talking about? There's Mario Maker. Don't forget Mario Maker.
there's that. But no, that's just really cool. I mean, I'm happy. Now I understand why people still talk about this game. People still mod it and do stuff with it. Like, I completely get it. I was blown away often. Like, I got really, I think it was midway near the end when I got completely absorbed and I just couldn't stop playing. Like, I was like, okay, I'm just going to play through one area and turn the game off. And I didn't stop. And I finished the game earlier than I thought I would. I just couldn't. It was just, I was having so much fun. I couldn't stop playing until Zen.
Until Zen.
I was like, game off now.
And yet there's cool stuff on Zen. Like, I mean, yeah, the platforming is really, really frustrating. But when I was walking around Zen finding, you know, human body, like the human bodies of people who previously tried to traverse their way, and then like that incredible, incredibly creepy floating baby boss at the end.
Yes.
And then of course, like that, like, I don't know, like Orwellian choice at the end, like you can either sell out or we'll kill you, I think is really funny. Because the whole game, you've been immersed in Gordon's perspective for the whole narrative. So of course the ending is left up to your choice. Like it's not a cutscene. It's like you can choose. You can choose to end the game in victory or end the game in defeat, but some kind of, I don't know, moral ground or something.
Yeah, I went with G-Man.
Well, for a while, a lot of people didn't know that you could do that. That you could actually, you didn't have to walk into the portal, but everyone thought that was just part of the gameplay, that you just walked in there. So I know there's some people that were surprised that later on, it's like, oh no, you can just stand there and he'll go, oh, well, yeah. I guess that's it, bye. Oh,
and like, his voice is so creepy, like that, like, it's like the bad ASMR, like all those mouth sounds he makes. It's so creepy.
and like one of the weird thing, or not weird thing, but like a hidden thing in this game, I know there's a security guard that if you don't kill him, he'll open a door for you with an armory near the end of the game. You get like a bunch of stuff to refill your ammo. And that was cool. Cause that's completely missable. You know, I like stuff like that. I like how much stuff they put in this game where I would try not to kill the guards very often, just because there were the few people that actually were on my side. So
there is just a lot of they're not even Easter eggs, they're just details. They're just beautiful little details that show such a attention to wanting to make you feel like you're in this world. And one of my favorite things about this world is that, I mean, if you're a PC gamer in the 90s or a grown-ass woman still playing these games in 2023, like, you're probably a nerd. And so to have this, he's just an MIT scientist who kicks so much ass. Like, how did he learn how to kick so much ass? Like, where did Gordon Freeman, between getting his PhD by 27 in theoretical physicists and getting his, like, where did he learn to shoot and to, take down aliens? It's very impressive.
Did you play a tutorial?
I did.
Yeah, the tutorial kind of explains that, where they're like, oh yeah, what is it, all Black Mesa employees are forced to go through gun training like every couple of months.
Right, but like target shooting compared to the kind of things you have to deal with in the actual game. Like, he's a total badass. And I think that gives, like, it makes me proud, you know? Like, I'm never going to be the doomed guy. I'm much more likely to be the academic. I am the academic nerd. But maybe if a portal opened and, you know, aliens were attacking my university, I could take them down.
And get a crowbar.
Yeah. Keep one in my office just in case.
I have a master sword in my office, if that counts.
Ooh, even better.
That's my basement. My basement's my office, but close enough. So it's cool. Near me. So.
I'd probably get fired if I kept a real weapon in my office.
Probably. Except, you know, luckily mine's in my house, so nobody will care but me.
Although my colleague, who's a Shakespeare scholar, does keep a bucket of plastic swords in his office, because he's always having his students, like, reenact the sword fights from Shakespeare plays. So that's kind of cute, you know?
That's cool.
Yeah.
Like, playing an old shooter too, it was nice that this game didn't have, like, just a turret sequence where you're just on a rails turret, like I'm so used to in so many shooters now. That's nice. They didn't have that. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I really hated the enemies that shoot the green lightning at you.
Yeah.
Hated those guys.
So
the Vortigaunts?
The Vortigaunts.
I don't know.
There's one of the later sequels lets you play as a Vortigaunt, isn't that true?
There's a mod, yeah.
Okay. A mod.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I've seen a mod where you can do cool. That. Now, one of the things about Half-Life, though, in Half-Life 2 is they really, like, they avoided chasing after a lot of first-person shooter trends. I think especially with Half-Life 2, because Half-Life 1 was just, they broke so many molds. But then with Half-Life 2, they kind of just iterated on what they had done with 1, rather than chasing what Halo was doing or what Call of Duty was doing, both of which were really revolutionizing PC games at the time. Well, first-person shooters, I guess I should say, at the time. There was, like, I remember being frustrated the first time I played Half-Life 2 that you couldn't, that you didn't really have a good, like, scoped weapon. I think you have the crossbow again, but that's about it. Or maybe it's the revolver. I can't remember. But, and just the way, like, allied characters reacted to you had control of them. It just, there was so many things, and like the way vehicles worked in Half-Life 2, there were so many little things that, like, worked so much better in Halo, I remember thinking, but I still liked Half-Life 2 better, but but yeah, they did not chase trends, and I like to think that if they were to make a Half-Life 3, they still wouldn't have. They, you know, Gordon still wouldn't have.
Valve is very much does their own thing.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting to play a game from this point in first-person shooter history where it's been, it's Doom and Quake and GoldenEye, but it's also setting trends that we'll see in later games. And then it's also not falling into some of the bad habits that I don't love about first-person shooters today. Those haven't been established yet. So it's kind of...
What bad habits don't you like? I'm curious.
The thing that it impacted... I mean, just that every game... I know it's a dream, but like the biggest titles are about speed and just run and gun and just the pace of play. And that a game like having narrative doled out to you in a really engaging pace, I guess. I think what Half-Life did that impacted single-player first-person shooters so much is just trying to have a story at all, right? Like, John Carmack, the creator of Doom, is really famous for saying, like, story in a first-person shooter is like story in a porn. You don't need it. And here's Half-Life. It's not like a, you know, it's not a Charles Dickens novel or something, but there is a story. There is suspense. You are wondering how this is going to play out and where these aliens come from and what's going on. And to just take us to the world of Zen, like, that's crazy that they did that. Like, it's very ambitious in terms of its story.
Yeah.
The idea of story that I like is someone referenced, and I usually use that, is someone comparing the original Evil Dead to the remake, where you can have a story, but you don't have to over explain everything. Like in this, their story beats to it, but a lot of it is just running and gunning. So there's enough story for you to grab on to grab your attention.
Yeah.
And then there's also still things that you can find. Like I know we don't want to get into it, but in Half-Life 2, you do meet Vortigaunts, and they aren't attacking you. They're just normal aliens. And I was watching a video of it earlier, and it's like, yeah, the final boss for Half-Life is controlling the Vortigaunts in Half-Life 1. He's making them attack Gordon. That's why in Half-Life 2, they're not really attacking him because they're not being mind controlled.
I never
knew that.
Yep.
Like even like one odd thing I thought was in this game that I didn't expect is the part where you have like control. Like the radar thing where you have like where it launches, where you're able to control like an airstrike to get you through a level.
Yep.
Like I was surprised when I got there. I'm like, this is cool. Where you have to blow up certain objects so you can get across.
And you blow up the gargantuan thing.
That was cool too.
The yeah.
Whatever they're cool called. Moment. I mean, you only see what two of them.
There's so many cool set pieces in Half-Life.
You see one terrorizing Marines for the first time, then you run into one way later on that chases you.
Yeah, there
really are. I was surprised with this game, like especially near the end, like when you get chased by the second monster, and like the difficulty, you know, gets harder. Like it does spike, but it was never felt unbearable that I couldn't get out of it by pretty much save saving essentially. The game let me do like being able to like just play everything very carefully and not be stupid and get hit by an enemy that I could easily kill. So like it never felt too much. I mean, as much as Zen is annoying, like I know we haven't really talked about that yet on purpose, but it wasn't unbearable. Even underwater in this game wasn't unbearable. There was one part where you're by a dam where you have to like you have a helicopter above you and you have a stupid fish monster in the water. That part gave me so much trouble.
Yeah,
I can't be the only one. It was terrible. I was like ready to
cheat. I hate that part. Yeah.
Okay. It was I finally blew up the helicopter barely by wasting all the ammo in my charge gun, and then I killed the fish. I don't even know how the hell I killed that fish, but it was miserable. Got through it.
There is a moment where I was like, I played this in a couple of playthroughs, but like when I finished my first one, I got pretty far and I absolutely quit. There's like a puzzle where it's after you get the crossbow and you kill the fish, there's like an underwater part we have to get through, and you have to jump onto a platform that has water. So you have to jump, it slides you across, and you have to jump duck into like a hole. And after I completed that, I saved the game and turned it off. And I was like, well, I'm done with Half-Life for a day because that was annoying.
No, it took some getting used to. There's a lot of crouch jumping in this game, and I was not used to that. I mean, that's not a thing.
Yeah, anymore. That was a thing.
It's not. That's not a mechanic that stuck around to the test of time.
No. That was one they should have worked out the kinks on that one. That did not work the way they wanted.
I was surprised by how I was able to play a shooter from 1998, and besides just feeling like a game from 1998, still. Like, you know, get a hang of what I was doing without having to look up much stuff. Like, how it controls, at least. And, you know, crouch jumping just pissed me off multiple times. Like, okay, once I got used to it and I understood, like, this is a mechanic that the game wants you to do, like, I was like, okay, whatever. There were a couple times where I'm like, how do I get through this window?
And also,
there's no way I would have figured it out without the tutorial. I mean, there's just no way.
I didn't watch the tutorial. I skipped
it. Good for you.
There's another thing. We're talking about AI a little bit earlier, but I kind of have the game playing in the background for like the three-hour full game walkthrough. We're talking about AI earlier, and the enemies also fight each other too, because there's moments where like the army is fighting the aliens, and I completely forgot about that.
That is really cool.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you do see them fighting each other.
Mm-hmm. It's nice because, I mean, it again adds to that feeling of immersion that the world is not revolving around you and your experience. You're immersed in this bigger world where this ongoing battle is happening and shit is hitting the fan, and you're a very small part of it, right? You're not trying to save the world that for most of the game you're just trying to escape.
And then you're trying to shut down the experiment?
I think so, yeah.
Except you go in the experiment near the end of the game.
So one of the interesting things about Zen is that and I thought a lot about this as I was trying to write the screenplay for this, is like, what is Gordon's actual job?
That's a great question.
Because to me, what I've always kind of thought would be really interesting is if his job was just as a kind of an expendable Zen explorer. Because you see those, right?
Yeah,
when you go to Zen, there's these people in the HEV suits there, and they're dead, And the people who run Black Mesa know these scientists go to Zen and die. And they just keep sending them. And my thought was that, like, my idea is that, like, maybe Gordon was supposed to go there and he would have died when he went there, maybe, you know?
I love that headcanon.
Yeah, that makes sense when you think about it. There aren't that many HVAC suits. Nobody but the dead people and you are wearing HVAC suits.
Right.
So that would actually make sense. Like, you know, you were someone that was going to go over there. I mean, you were in that room where they're doing some kind of experiment.
They also specifically say they're trackers in the suit. So if they know they're dead, they know they're dead. And I believe when you die, the suit like screams out a bunch of stuff too. So they know you're dead when you die.
Yeah, it does. I saw it a few times.
And if you're Gordon, like, wouldn't you maybe have a little bit of resentment towards your employers? Maybe he doesn't know that that's what he's supposed to be doing, but then he finds out, like, you know, that for me in my story version of it, that's what happens. Like, he finds out at like the third act, start of the third act, like, I mean, oh shit.
That would fit. It would fit this type of employer. Like, I'm sure Umbrella didn't tell people, hey, we're going to kill all of you when you get done, okay? Like,
right.
I'm sure,
and it definitely, I mean, within just the first game, it feels like a huge reveal that he wasn't aware of that they have these specimens and that they've made contact. I love that.
Oh, yeah, because isn't one of the levels you find a bunch of, like, the aliens in cages and stuff, right? Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a big shock.
Yeah.
I want to watch this screenplay, Dan.
Well, I'll have to keep working on it. This is giving me motivation, so I appreciate it.
When it comes like weird stuff that I didn't catch, I wouldn't have caught without reading the guide. There's one part where I had like push a box underneath so this drop down item would hit the box and go back up so I could laser through the wall. I could not. I was like, what the hell am I supposed to do? Until the guy told me. I mean, there's cool stuff like that. I mean, again, that's just what PC gaming, right, from this era kind of thing. Maybe
Dan. Dan, does your Gordon Freeman have a ponytail? Because there's one of my favorite things.
My Gordon Freeman is, go ahead. He's more like Nick Cage in The Rock.
I was going to say, because I just see a bunch of like prototypes of the models, and the prototype Gordon Freeman model has a ponytail. I think that's funny. So,
also, how the hell did we bring up The Rock two episodes in a row now?
What was the last one?
Because it's the best.
The one you were on, Modern Warfare 3.
I
talk about shoving balls in their mouth. That was Modern
Warfare. Oh, yeah.
Well, is Modern Warfare 3 the one with the prison where you come up through the showers? Or is
that's two. That's Modern Warfare 3, they have a chemical attack, and we were talking about nerve gas. We don't know what it is, but it made me think of The Rock nerve gas.
That's a scene stolen right out of The Rock, in the gulag.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned that when we did two off. Another thing I thought was interesting, too, which is very much this era type thing, is how many buttons I had to press in this game to make things happen.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like that, but I'm not used to it without it being like a big glowing thing where the game's like, go press this. Like, there's none of that communication to you. It's just, you just have to go, this is a button, this makes sense, press it.
Yeah, everything's diegetic. Like, even your health, you get it off of packs on the wall. And
I like that.
Yeah, it's great. Hey, I like this game.
I did too, and I came into this game not expecting to like it. I went into this game thinking I'm not going to have fun, but I need to do this, and I had way more fun than I expected. Even with the weird platforming at times, like even when I had to jump over pipes that are trying to kill me, like I was finding a lot of fun, and I felt there was enough health things around, enough armor things around that even if you played stupidly, you could still get yourself refilled and have enough to stay alive. And I think that's a testament to this game design too, is that. I mean, I try to play very careful when I play shooters like this, where if I was to lose like 50% of my health, we're reloading and redoing this fight, like because I didn't want to, you know, play stupidly and end up where I couldn't beat the game, even though I had the cheat codes and a tab in my phone in case things got bad. So, I was prepared. I always look it up and figure out if I can, like if I can get through the game without. We're not going to cheat, but if I need to, we're cheating code. Like, doesn't matter.
I as a father, I have no problem with that.
Every game I play, I save state and do stuff. There was one really confusing part near the end where you have, like, the teleporters. You have to, like, jump around and teleport, and then, like, I had to keep redoing it. I didn't understand what was happening.
When he's teleporting to Zen, or?
It's before Zen, is when you're you're working on, like, trying to get the guy to activate the generator.
Yes.
To get to Zen.
Like, big tubes.
Yeah, I got really confused because I think I had to jump on a different angle or jump on one of the different sides. It took it was really confusing me.
Yeah,
I didn't like it, but the guide warned me. It's like, yeah, have fun. That's where I had to look up a video to see what the video did that I was doing wrong.
Yeah, I used a lot of video help.
Well, thankfully we can. So
yeah,
it makes sense. It's like, oh, the guy told me go up here and jump into the last one, like, which made sense in a game point, a gameplay wise. And all of a sudden I teleport back to the beginning. I'm like, I didn't do anything. I didn't press a button. I didn't open a door. Like, I didn't. And then the guy's like, oh, yeah, then you're going to go here. And I'm like, but I didn't go here. And then I realized I think I had to jump in through a different door. So the doors had numbers and they would take you to, depending on what side of the teleport you jumped into. It was weird. It took a little bit of finessing until I understood what the hell was happening.
For sure. For sure.
At least you can say whenever you want to. So even if you have issues, you can get through the weird jumping puzzles. And I appreciate that I could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it made the game. I mean, and again, this was the PS2 version. I'm sure saving was horrible, but here it's just fine. Just click. Yeah. Well, I wasn't worried about having 100 saves because, you know, this is an old game and I'm playing on a modern computer, so I'm fine. You know, because I never saved over a save. I just kept making more saves because I didn't, in case I screwed myself over. Okay, I could always
come back. That seems wise. That seems really wise.
I did screw myself over once or twice where I had to reload a couple saves back. I'm like, well, this ain't good. Let's redo this.
So I use cheat codes, and I should have listened to you, Mike, about saving up save points, because there's a very part in the beginning where you have to, like, hit a lever to go down, make an elevator go down, and there's, like, head crabs shooting out of a wall at you. And underneath that elevator is a grinder, so I fell in and could not die, so I was literally being pulled down and stuck, so I had to restart the game from the beginning.
Oh, no!
I'm sorry.
It was only, like, 30 minutes of progress.
That's good.
Very chaotic to have those things falling on you. It's like, what?
Because this is not a modern game. Like, a modern game wouldn't let you do that, but this being an older style game, it's going to have moments where you can screw yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I went into that understanding that because I think I've done it before in these type of games. So I was being extra careful because that's one of my fears. Like, that's one reason I used to be terrified of Resident Evil game, because you can screw yourself. Like, Code Veronica, for example, you can screw yourself in Code Veronica.
Very much so.
Which I've seen people do. One reason why it's not on the show yet, even though Blair's trying to get me to play it, because I don't want to play it.
I am also getting you to play it, but I'm kind of like, eh.
So I want to put it on, but then I have to play it, and I don't want to play it. That game terrifies me more than this game. So.
Oh, that game's spooky. It's okay.
Oh, it's definitely scarier.
Yeah. I mean, this game's not meant to be scary.
I don't do scary games very well, but I can play the Half-Life games.
I mean, this is not meant to be a horror game, but it really gave me the feeling of a horror game. Because you're secluded, because you're fighting aliens, you're fighting I want to kill you. The lead up to Zen, the way you have to get that guy to operate the teleport, and I think that's the first time you see those, like, floating enemies that come around. I thought that was interesting, even though they were annoying me. And I did it twice because I fucked up at the very end and jumped and died, and then I didn't save as close as I probably should have, and then I realized they can kill the guy.
Can't you fall off too and insta die?
Yeah, that's what I did. I jumped. If you jump into it, yeah.
Yeah.
Fall off or jump into it.
This is also the level where they were very specifically like, yeah, we're only going to use that. Was it like the long jump? Like, you're only going to get it here because it would make the rest of the game really easier.
Yeah.
That was the fun thing about Zen, was they gave you that long jump and the anti-gravity. And it was like they were trying something with Zen. It was just underbaked, I think.
It's just difficult too, and like this. I mean, maybe at the time it wouldn't have been, but like, I don't like platforming in a first-person shooter. It's just I want to be able to see my character's feet. Like, I want that, you know, side angle or you know, bird's eye view. I don't want it, you know, from my personal view. Yeah, and it's just it makes it harder. So it bothered me. Well, I also suck at platformers too, by the way. But so there's that too. But I did decent in this one.
I could barely do the platforms in the tutorial. I mean, I could barely complete those. So I was like, this is going to be trouble.
Well, it's because you were playing with the wrong controls too. So.
That's true.
What kind of keyboard do you have?
It was just like a pretty standard, like, Dell PC keyboard. It works fine for things like Doom or Quake, but this is a much more complicated game with platforming.
Yes. But it's just... It feels so weird to have platforming in this still, but...
I just wasn't expecting it, you know? I really wasn't.
Well, I mean, why would you? You shouldn't.
Well,
surprise.
I was going to say, because I have like a 60% keyboard and I regret it. I need to get me like a little bit bigger keyboard. And that's pretty... Yeah, that's the real reason why I don't like using a keyboard for first-person shooter games, because the damn thing is missing like half the keys, or I have to hit like another key to hit specific keys. So I'm kind of like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you need a better keyboard. I mean, I have a laptop keyboard. The only thing that's missing, it doesn't have a numpad on the side. But other than that, it's a full keyboard. So it's
good enough. Yeah, mine has a numpad. Man, I have not had a good like PC to play games on since like 2003, 2001. I don't even know. The last game I played was Unreal Tournament, the first Unreal Tournament. So that tells you. So since then, I finally got like a decent gaming laptop a few years ago. But the thing has like, I don't know, is this the way gaming laptops are? The mouse track, the trackpad is offset to the left. It's centered under the keyboard, but it's just not where I want it. I don't know.
Those things are the devil. Yeah. I hate the trackpad. My wife can use the trackpad. I'm like, how can you use that thing? I'm like, I need an actual mouse. Like my thing is, it's underneath the space bar. I think it's centered. You're right. It is off to the left. It's not centered. It's off to the left.
Because I have a numpad on here, it's not centered. Yeah.
Oh, why would you? You can't use those things. Those things are nightmares. You gotta use. I have a wireless mouse that I bought because I won't.
I have a wireless mouse. I just never play at a desk, so I never use a mouse. I don't know.
Oh, I have a board that my wife bought for me at a thrift store, but it's like it's made for to put your laptop on top of it, and then you can play that way and it has room for your mouse and stuff. That's how I edit and do all this shit that I do for this podcast.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's good.
I have a high-end PC because I got blessed with COVID money, and now I use that PC to have sexy Resident Evil mods with Chris Redfield with his shirt off.
That's probably the way to play Resident Evil 2. Oh, game. That game fucking terrified me. Talk about a spooky game. Oh,
speaking of spooky games, right back around. At least, have you played Half-Life 2, by chance?
No, I have not. Now I want to, now that I've played Half-Life 1.
Okay, because there's a whole horror, you know, Dan. Yeah, it's the Ravenholm level, and it's known to be like the best horror sequence for a video game, and I'm really excited for Mike to get there.
I can tell you it will be next year at some point. I already have up to January planned out, so it'll be sometime after that, but it will happen. So if you wait, I'll be doing it again, because I the only reason I played this game was to play 2.
Yeah, heads up at least.
That's the whole reason why this is on the show.
I really want to play Half-Life 2 on a console, though, and I don't think I can do that.
Oh, yeah, you can.
Really? Which one?
Well, you have 360, you can.
Yeah, the orange box is for 360.
I don't think I still have my 360. I have my Xbox One and my Xbox S, but I don't have a 360.
I think you can still play them on there. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's backwards compatible, right?
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Xbox One is nice. Mine doesn't work, but I need to buy one.
I'm going to play this game.
I only have... Well, I could get it on the Xbox, but I have a PS3. I don't have a 360 anymore. So in my collection, I only have the PS3 version of the Orange Box, which is notoriously bad. And
oh, really?
I can't finish Half-Life 2 on it because I get so close to the end. You're in the Citadel and you're headed towards the end. Basically, I'm like half an hour from the end of the game. And it freezes and glitches, and it just won't let me go past that part. I restart.
I hate when that happens.
I reloaded an older save. I get back up there, and still same thing happens every time.
Well, you reminded me. I had one glitch in this game where I thought I was done, where when I was in some pipe midway through this game, close to getting to Zen, it loaded in a pipe, and when it loaded, I couldn't move. I was like, oh, shit. So I went and reloaded a different save, tried it again. I finally had to turn off the game and then reopen the game. And then luckily it worked. But I was like, oh, shit. I mean, this happened. I mean, there were like Soul Reaver 2, Blood Omen 2, both of those Legacy of Kain games. I could not get them to run on PC or PS2 emulation. Or Blood Omen 2, I didn't. It froze in the final boss. And I said, fuck it. Close enough. And Soul Reaver 2 just wouldn't even run. So, I mean, sometimes you run into that with PC games. With Zen, one of the things that I do want to mention is you have two boss fights. I mean, you have the one boss fight where you fight some like crab-like monster, which isn't two, but then you fight a giant baby as your final boss.
How do you say his name? The Nihilan? The Nihilan.
Yeah.
That's how I say it. I don't know. Yeah. He's a very creepy guy, that floating baby.
Yes.
Yep.
It was very weird. I mean, that was where I almost had to cheat because I couldn't. I don't think I had enough. I barely had enough ammo to get through it. I couldn't miss many things. I couldn't miss many of my shots. There's not a lot of ammo in that room.
I like the super jumping dynamic. Like that was actually kind of fun. That was like, oh, trampoline first person shooter. Cool.
When I beat him, I had one health left when he died. Literally one HP. I was like, fuck, I'm happy. This is over. Because I thought for sure I was going to have to cheat. I was playing at it for like, it felt like an hour just trying to
on
get
easy.
It right.
You were on easy.
Yeah. I just couldn't kill him.
Oh, man.
And he kills you pretty quick. He can do a lot of damage to you.
Sure. Yeah.
I even got in his head, like you can jump up and end up in his head, and I took the crowbar and I was beating at the glowy orb, but he was still able to do enough damage to me before I could finish him.
And he's so creepy how he's talking to you, and oh my god, yeah, that whole thing creeped me out a lot.
It was very strange. I did not expect a giant baby.
Nope.
That's my final boss. I'm not playing Drakengard. Somebody get that reference somewhere else. So.
I missed it. I was just thinking about how, like, since I have a 1-month-old baby, I think that's why I'm extra scared of babies right now, because...
That's fair.
Babies are scary.
Yes, they are.
Did you know babies have sleep? You know babies have less bones than us.
Oh God, that's just like them. That's just something they would do. Those creepers.
Yeah, they just grow
typical,
more bones.
Typical baby. Yeah, I mean, I'm always feeling my son's head, and his head is all like his skull is not connected. You know, and it's nope. Creepy. Yeah. I'm like, you have holes in your head, buddy.
No, feel his arms. There's like no bones in there.
Oh my God, you're right. He's just goo. He's just a sack of goo.
But it's a weird final boss fight that I did not expect in this game. I was very thrown off. I'm like,
no,
all right.
It's super creative, right? Because like, I feel like most scary monster boss battles, they are like the most macho looking scary aliens. And then you've just got this baby who's utterly terrifying. Like just that unexpectedness is lovely. I love it.
I hated it, but I get where you're coming from. I completely get where you're coming from.
Never seen anything like it. I mean, you know what it did kind of remind me of is the floating baby in 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
I do. That's She's a weird movie, but yes.
It's a good fetus movie. In space.
I don't remember the context of it, but yes, I do remember the fetus in space.
He's just there. Yeah, why. It's just what he's doing.
I can't remember. They got a lot of stuff into it or what it represents. Yeah, it's been a while since I watched
Nothing
that
about
movie.
That movie makes any sense. You just have to watch it while you're high on acid or something, and then it'll make sense.
Hey, I mean, that does make... I just watched Rogue One while I was high on edibles, and it made Rogue One even more interesting, so...
Really?
It works.
Good to know.
That was fun. Any last thing about to say about Half-Life before we go on to questions, comments, memories? Anything we missed? I'm sure I'll get the stuff that I have... I got way more than I expected. All right, let's see. From the official Laser Time community, we'll just start here. From Dave Heen, friend of the show. I remember back in early 1999, a coworker got a whole 500 megahertz Pentium 3 and an ATI Rage Pro and brought his PC to a friend's house. We played Half-Life all night. Good time.
Oh man,
Pentium 3. I remember that. Every best memory. From Mark Choice, the OG Steam game, boot up the compact PC, install from CD-ROM for an hour, Steam account, okay, whatever, just get to the game already. 20 plus years later, still using that Steam account.
Wow.
That's fair.
I mean, yeah, we haven't even talked about how this game came out before Valve had even made Steam. Like, if Half-Life hadn't made it big the way it did, maybe we wouldn't have Steam.
Maybe
we wouldn't get to return half the games because they won't run correctly and they glitch and they are absolute garbage.
I really do love Steam. As a guy who said I would never go digital, I went just.
I think it's because I'm a shitty Mac user that this happens to me. You know, so I take full responsibility. I apologize, Valve, on behalf of myself.
I haven't had any issues with Valve games. Just the Legacy of Kain stuff, but that's also notorious for being shit.
Yeah.
Also, the ROMs are shit too, so that's saying something.
I think it's because we trust Steam. Like, if it was like a Microsoft thing, because Microsoft's been notorious for like not saving stuff, and even I think Apple didn't they like remove that entire like TV show that just came out? It was Peacock. Peacock took away that the Pink Ladies, whatever. I can't think of the name of that movie again.
I know. Disney Plus got rid of Willow.
Yeah, the Grease. Did they? God damn it! I was gonna watch that.
They got rid of the show. Yeah.
Yeah, Peacock got rid of the Grease, the Pink Ladies. After it ended, it was immediately taken off after like a week. But
why?
Because it was bad.
Still, like you created it, you already paid for it. Just leave it on there for a bit.
Yeah, right. but I think it's because I do trust Steam. Steam also has been notorious for like if like the company wants to take off the game. Like I forgot what it was recently, but they took off the game. But if you own the game before they took it off, you can still download it from Steam and play it. So
yeah, as Microsoft. Yeah. Xbox did that, I think.
That's nice. That's really nice.
I think. Yeah, I mean, if you bought it, it shouldn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It just doesn't need to be sold. I mean, there's so many rights issues, but also Steam usually tries to announce, like, if stuff is going to leave. Like, Battlefield Bad Company 2 was going to get taken off, might already been taken off, and I bought it as soon as it went on sale. Because I was like, I already own it, but fucking, I want it on Steam. Okay. And a couple, let's see, another one I'm going to read from Pete Schuhl. If you have the chance to play the expansion, they're both fairly short and fun. Valve even released them in a timely fashion. To me, it's one of those games that almost difficult to describe the impact of it because it influenced basically everything that came after it. 98 was just an amazing year for PC games in general, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right from Dan Devine, you actually need to play Black Mesa. It finally finished, and it's one of the few examples I can think of a great fan-made remake. I do want to know. Right from
it
John,
is great.
I'm very interested. From John Silverman, I just played it for the first time a few years ago, and wow, I loved every second of it. Right, and then from Stefan Bonatis, the itchy sore section scared the shit out of me and made me hate underwater sections in first person games forever. I'm not sure, is that like the fish thing that I was talking about earlier?
Yeah.
Okay, that is fair. That was horrible. And then from the I watched the entire Overload Super Replay group from Matt Clark. My question is just, why did you play the original instead of Black Mesa? Because I wanted that experience. It didn't feel right playing Black Mesa first.
Well, I was actually going to answer that too on here.
Oh, feel free.
Yeah, no, Black Mesa is technically like, it's not the same game. There's stuff that they've taken out and updated and all kinds of other, so it wouldn't be right to play Black Mesa as a replacement for this because in an essence, they are two very different games.
Mm. Plus, I needed, this is, I mean, as a gamer, as more of a, well, podcaster and more of a, I consider myself kind of like a more, maybe, I don't know what I'm looking for, historian, I was going to say, that doesn't sound right, but I want to experience games like the way they were made, especially ones that are genre-defying like this one is. Mm. Like, I felt this had to be experienced in my life with a PC.
Yeah, that's fair.
I appreciate that. Yeah, because like Joseph said, Black Mesa is not the same game. It's a reimagining of it, really, in a lot of ways.
I can't remember the name of the university, too, but there's one of those universities that's like a leading source for game studies. They have one of those labs where if you want to go play test one of the really old games from the 70s or 80s, you can play it on the original hardware, on the original television set from that time, wow, just so you can fully experience it.
That's cool, because, I mean, sometimes that helps.
It's very important, I think, yeah.
I know I was at some video game exhibit at some point. I ran into it at a museum, and I remember they had Shadow of the Colossus there. You could play in a PS2.
That's cool.
That game deserves it.
I love that game so much.
I did it for episode 14. Too. Yeah, I need to redo it, though, because the first episodes are bad on the show.
have you seen this? You know what? I want to cover with you, Mike. Have you seen the screenplay?
No.
That script is so fucking bad. It's hilarious.
All video game movies.
A screenplay for Shadow of the Colossus?
Yes, it's very Final Fantasy. Like, the Wander is very Tidus from Final Fantasy X. It's really bad. It's that really bad.
I need to look this up.
Yeah, go look it up. I think the guy that found it reads it, and it's just really bad.
Okay. And from a comment from Zach Zek, I have only played part of it on PS2 after the Super Replay released. I got lost in the level and was thinking about using the Super Replay as a guide, but I never did and still haven't beat it. I'm sure that guide, that wouldn't be, I'm not sure how they play, but knowing them, it wouldn't be a very good guide. They're usually idiots when they did those Super Replays, even though I love them, but they were idiots. And from
the thing, if I had played this game, just a couple of years ago, I don't know that I would have loved it.
That's right.
But playing it in 1999 when I did, like, it was just such a formative experience. There was just nothing like it. So it's really, really hard to relate to people who didn't play it until more recently. Mm-hmm. For me,
it still holds up decently.
Right, right.
Other than the fact that I was running out of ammo on the final boss fight and didn't really feel like there was a good way for me to get more, where I felt like I could almost be locked out. There weren't too many things that really bothered me. I mean, sure, platforming was annoying at times, but it was, I mean, with save states, it was doable.
Yeah. I think it's cool to be able to hear both from someone who was there when it came out and from later, because to me, it's like, you know, the first time you see Casablanca, and like, none of us were alive for that. So like, how does that, does that story still make an impact despite our movie technologies being really different? Like, is it just a solid work of art? And for me, Half-Life is absolutely that, you know, it sounds like so many of these comments you've received are about people playing it for the first time and finding that it stands up. I'm not sure that's true of GoldenEye, to be honest, as much as I love it. I'm not sure if I had played it for the first time now, I would love it.
You don't listen to my episode. The one guy did not love it who played it for the first time.
Yeah, it's a bit
of... Have you played it, Elise, have you played it on Xbox?
I tried playing it on Xbox and I tried playing it on Switch, and it just, the controls are not right. Even when you reset them, even when you fix it, you know, the way you're supposed to fix it so that it can be, it just feels weird. Now, I still have my N64 and I can pull it out and play it on the N64 controller, and it feels very natural. Yeah. But like, if you give a modern gamer an N64 controller, they're going to be like, excuse me, this must be a joke. Like, so I do
I played GoldenEye on Xbox. I played it on Switch also, and having to configure the controls on the Switch just didn't work for me. But on the Xbox, I found it to be really accessible and fun. I even was able to play multiplayer for a couple of hours with my nephews, and they're 12 and 9.
What do they think?
They loved it.
Oh,
so
my God.
That
makes me feel better.
On
Xbox. Hope for GoldenEye.
Not with an N64 controller, because like you said,
nobody
should
play with an N64 controller.
GoldenEye was the first game to allow dual analog sticks. If you played with one controller in each hand in solitaire mode, totally natural, right? Totally natural.
I actually have a USB N64 controller that I use whenever I go back to play 64 games or 64 ROMs for this show.
Such a relic, isn't it? It's just a delight.
I don't like to pull it out unless I absolutely only those situations. I'm like, I gotta have this junky janky thing.
You guys know the controller was designed for Super Mario 64. Like, they didn't even have in mind like this would be useful for literally any other game. They were just like, this game.
I 100% believe that.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So yeah.
I completely can see it.
Nintendo, what do you mean Kid Icarus is breaking kids' fingers on the 3DS? That makes no sense.
I still get to play that on 3DS. I really want to, I think. One day. It's not good, is it? I heard bad things.
I don't know.
And from Curtis Majors, though I remember playing it when it came out, made my dad buy a whole new computer because it barely ran on our current system. I was traumatized by the headcrab zombies, but I loved it.
Oh.
I get that. And from, God, I got a lot of comments on this one. From Giant Bomb, from Joey Gills. Oh, man, such a good time. One of the first games I quick saved at near death. No ammo instead of quick load. Woof, that sucked. I can see that. Okay, I'm not sure what this is. From Paul Lucci, I just replayed the RTX version that got released this year. I recommend it if you got the hardware. I don't know what that is.
Me neither.
There is a, I'm surprised none of us brought up. You can play the, so there's Half-Life and there's Half-Life Source. You can buy Half-Life Source, and then someone made an HD mod for it. Yes. I'm not a big fan of it because it's really shiny. It's really, really shiny.
Mm. Yeah, it is.
Oh, okay, that's cool, though.
I think it's all cool. Those RTX things are novel.
It's true.
But I never heard of it. I actually want to play a game that way.
Oh, Ray Trace, that's why. Okay, now I know.
Yeah, Ray Trace.
I'm looking it up right now. Wow, that does look interesting.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I guess for me, like, also the point of this, like, I wanted to, you know, experience the game like the way it was first experienced.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want it. But yeah, it does look a lot prettier. That's for sure. And you are right. It does look a lot shinier, too.
Wow. I mean, can you imagine, like, to make a work of art so meaningful to people that they will put in all this time and effort to remake it and remaster it and do it justice to make it look pretty? Like, gosh, I can't imagine ever, like, writing anything that anyone would want care enough to do something like that, too.
I thought you were going with that weird joke of like making something and then making it look different. And I was made that joke about that woman who like repainted a Jesus painting and it looks completely derpy.
Oh no. Yeah, there's always someone, right?
Yeah.
And from Andrew Lean, playing this game in its heyday and the various spinoff and mods was such a great time. The engine eventually brought us things like Team Fortress and Counter-Strike, which still have an active players today. It was widely considered to be one of the greatest games of all time and still is. I get that now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And last comment on Reed from the Valve Games posting group that I just randomly joined to post this. From Frederico Algray, I went to a technical school, so it was mandatory to have computers for studying. That was in 2013. My classmates, students from other grades, and I used to play Half-Life LAN during recess. We were about 20 people sitting on the benches playing it in Crossfire.
Wow.
Okay.
That's adorable. I can just picture that.
I forgot this. I mean, I forget about it. Yeah, but this would have been a big multiplayer thing, too, for people. It's just weird to me because I guess I'm not a multiplayer guy at all anymore. Like, I don't want to play anything multiplayer. I just want single player games only. So. I forget because the original just had like a multiplayer like deathmatch thing, didn't it, Dan?
No. Well, yeah. So, yes, it did. But
OK,
I don't think it was very popular. I never really played it. It was the mods that really became the big thing for Half-Life. Okay. Yeah.
And what is the canon
Team
in
Fortress
game?
And would say what now?
What is the canon ending? That where you work for G-Man or is that I'm assuming?
I'm not sure. I think so, because that's how Half-Life 2 starts.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the canon ending is you go through the portal and you, he's like, wow, you know, I'm so glad you decided to make this choice that was entirely your choice.
Right.
And laughs his weird mouth sound laugh and haunts my dreams forever. That's the canon ending.
Because, like, I guess the idea was they were using this portal to essentially, what, use the aliens to fight for them or something of that nature.
It's confusing. But yes. Well, so there's actually, so you're, the canon's kind of been retrofitted for the first game.
Okay.
In that, like, the G-Man is sort of a third party, but there's this intergalactic war or interdimensional war between the Vortigaunt race who and the Combine. And the Combine are, like, enslaving the Vortigaunts. And the Combine are actually in control of that baby at the end. Like, that baby is a Combine baby. We just didn't know it in the first game. It's, like I said, it was kind of retrofitted. I don't know if that's, like, true canon or if that's fan theory canon that I've just absorbed in my brain, but I kind of like that theory.
Okay. I do, too. I mean, I know the Combine are the big, like, villain in the at least the beginning of 2. I don't know anything about 2.
No, they're the big villain in the second game.
Okay. I know very little about 2. I just, it's always been on my list to play it. Okay.
Yeah. It's confusing.
Yeah.
No, that's fair. All right. And before we go to Shelf Stacker Box, I do want to read out a Steam code because I have tons of them. I need to get rid of them. So today we're going to give away, let's see here. Okay, let's give away a good game for a change. Celeste. I have a Steam code for Celeste. The code is 6KRKEXG37YJXOED. I think it's an O. Or try 0. See what works. Because I can never guess. I can never tell with those. So there's your Steam code for Celeste. All right. Awesome. And actually, one thing I forgot I want to say. Like, this is because Portal takes place in the same universe, correct, for Half-Life?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I played Portal 1 and 2, so that's my more introduction to this. But I definitely doesn't Portal 2 make a comment about the Black Mesa scientist or something?
She makes a comment. Well, Black Mesa's name dropped in the song in Portal 1 at the end.
There is in one of the offices that you can go through at the end of Portal 1, I believe it shows that they are competing against Black Mesa for Portal technology.
Okay. Been a while since I played Portal 1. I played Portal 2 twice for this podcast so far. Portal 1.
And then in Portal 2, if there's, when you go underground in Portal 2, there's a ship down there that you can find that says Borealis on it.
Oh.
Which is the ship that they were looking for at the end of episode 2 that they were getting, like, a mysterious signal from, I think. And episode 3 would have been them hunting for this mysterious ship, Borealis, where that held the key to this interdimensional war.
Okay. We're never getting episode 3, are we?
I don't think so. No.
I don't know. That's not what Half-Life Alyx is at the end of the game.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah. Like, is that considered the third game, Alyx?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So Half-Life Alyx completely changes everything in Half-Life canon. It almost, like, it restarts the whole Half-Life 2 story over without getting any spoilers.
Okay.
Yeah, there. I think, I don't know if it was Gabe Newell, but someone did release what would have been the script for Half-Life. I don't even think it's Half-Life.
It was Mark Laidlaw, the writer.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Half-Life 3. It might have been Half-Life 2, Episode 3. But I think all the characters are gender swapped, and that's how they were able to release it. It's a parody, apparently.
He just named everything different. It's actually not called Episode 3. It's Epistle 3.
Okay.
Yeah. All the characters are named differently. That's all.
Okay. I mean, it makes sense to get past copyright.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to our last segment. Shelf Stacker Box, and I'm going to go first. So I came into this game, as I said, with no expectations, and I left having a great time. Like, I probably won't play this again just because, but I love what I played, and I can't believe how much fun I had with a game from 1998 that I had no nostalgic for. So, and a first-person shooter, not my favorite genre, and I absolutely loved it. Going on the shelf, and I'm so glad I finally played this game, and I can say I beat it. But what about you, Joe?
I was going to put this in the box, but us talking about it reminded me that I did have a good time and I shouldn't be such a butthead about it. But I'm not putting it on the shelf because I do think you should at least play this game once. So I'm going to stack it. So it's going to go in the stack, recommended for people who've never played it. You should play it. But if you played it, it's enough for me.
No, that's. And what about you, Dan?
Definitely on the shelf. It'll always be on my shelf. I play it every couple of years. And yeah, I've said enough about how much I love it. So.
All right. And what about you, Elise?
I think I would stack it. I mean, I don't have that personal connection to it that's so meaningful it would go on my shelf, but I did enjoy it enough to want to play Half-Life 2. And just for the posterity and for its significance on gaming culture and legacy on first-person shooters, I don't think I could possibly put it in the box.
All right. I mean, this game, yeah, did really revolutionize things, so.
Yeah. And the story alone, I mean, just you can just watch a game on YouTube and you're really into it, that tells you something.
That is fair.
Yep.
And next week you can hear us talk about Terranigma. So definitely stay tuned for that episode. All right. And Dan, where can people find you at?
My Twitter is IndieJones84. I do still tweet every once in a while. It'd be cool if people followed me on there, because the only people who follow me these days are sex bots.
Hey, there's no bots on Twitter. That's what Elon Musk keeps telling everybody.
I just counted back on my last, 30 follows, and they're all just sex bots. It's mm-hmm. great. I love it.
A ton of mine. So much. Makes your numbers go up, so.
Yeah. And then subscribe to, of course, we have a podcast on your favorite podcast platforms.
To be fair, my last three follows, I'm pretty sure, are sex bots also on the podcast on Twitter. Oh, so that's Twitter for you.
I hope those sex bots are enjoying this episode. That's all I can say.
I don't follow them back, and they never comment. Just it makes my follower number go up. So I'm like, awesome. Get me more followers for Twitter. That will probably be dead at the end of the way we're going the end of the year. So, and Elise, where can we find you at?
You can find all my social media handles, and you can purchase copies of my video game history books at www.elisenor.com. That's AlyseKnorr. If you want to hear stories about queer and women's history, including queer pirates and Sappho and queer experiences of Christianity, check out Sweet Bitter Podcast. And I also answer video game trivia and history questions, particularly about Mario and GoldenEye, on my TikTok, which is just Elise Knorr.
That's cool. I really need to mess with TikTok more.
It's really fun. I really enjoy being able to just have people that I don't even know contact me and ask questions.
People do love TikTok. My wife watches it all the time, and I watch it sometimes.
It's addicting. But... it's very addicting.
That's the ADD.
I think TikTok's given me ADD, that's for sure.
Secret, you already had it, didn't know it. How about that?
There you go. That could be.
And if you enjoyed this episode, you can go listen to over 450 other episodes, almost 500, I think. Very, very close to the point you're hearing this. So of our giant catalog, we did the Portal games. You can hear about that, plus just everything else that we cover, movies, comics, video games, whatever. The hell I convince people to talk with me about. So go check all that out. And if you want to support the show, we do a Patreon. Right now, our poll is Edgar Wright movies that Mike has never seen. So you will see in the show notes to that. It's Baby Driver, Last Night in Soho, Shaun of the Dead, and Hot Fuzz. You get to vote which one we're going to cover once I
help
that poll. And so go definitely check that out. I think it's already published. And if you want, and also we have Discord. Please feel free to join our Discord. You see a link in the show notes. You can chat with us. And want to give a shout out to my awesome intro and outro courtesy of Helena at Hell Has Fury. She's TikTok famous. Definitely go follow her. And why don't you talk to my buddy Bill Tucker, started his own podcast. He used to do the MCU movies with me, A Gamer Looks At 40. Definitely go check him out also. I think that's everything I need to say. So we will see you guys all next time. Bye, everybody.